Welcome to another episode of Naval History and Heritage Command's podcast, Anchored in History, Stories of America's Navy. I'm your host, Cliff Davis. The topic of today's show revolves around the Navy Department Library, celebrating the most impressive milestone of providing 225 years of service and support to the fleet and public. I want to welcome with me in the studio Dylan Beezer, Librarian and Reference Section Supervisor of the History, Archives, and Library Division, and say a quick thanks for coming in to talk today about the Navy's library. This is quite a momentous milestone of reaching 225 years of service, and especially when the Navy later on this year will be celebrating its 250th anniversary.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Cliff. We're happy to be here to talk about Navy's library 225th birthday. We're glad we got to make it to this point.
The topics we're going to discuss today are the history of the library, some of the library's unique holdings, public access and research opportunities, and the importance of the Navy library to today's warfighter. So Dylan, let's jump right in. And for all of our listeners, would you mind telling us a little bit about your interest in library studies and what exactly is it you do for the Navy Library?
Yeah, sure. So like many librarians, I suspect, I got my start loving books, loved being at the library, loved it enough to pursue a degree in history. I started working for Naval History and Heritage Command after I graduated college in a different part, not in the library, but as I was working in that other division, I started to get my master's in library science. Halfway through, a position opened up in cataloging in the library, and I was able to get that position. I now work as the reference supervisor, which means I manage the people who sit at the desk, or if you have questions and you're emailing, calling us, we're the people who are answering that. So I manage who works on what questions, what's going on to our website, what's being digitized, as well as adding material to the collection, whether that be through purchasing or donations.
So a passion for the library has now turned into a full-time job.
Yep.
That's awesome. Moving into our first topic, the history of the library. As our nation was still in its infancy, a single-page letter from President John Adams to the first Secretary of the Navy, Benjamin Stoddart, directed the establishment of a Navy library in 1800. Why did President Adams want to establish a library?
So we don't have any direct quotes about why he wanted to establish the library beyond the letter, but we have to imagine it was just to catch up with Europe. You know, they had the great navies of the time, but we do have the letter, and I think that informs us. So I'll read part of the letter real quick so we can kind of get an idea of what President Adams was thinking.
Okay.
So this is the part of the letter that says, "It ought to consist of all the best writings in Dutch, Spanish, French, and especially the English, upon the theory and practice of naval architecture, navigation, gunnery, hydraulics, hydrostatics, and all branches of mathematics subservient to the profession of the sea. The lives of all the admirals, English, French, Dutch, or any other nation, who have distinguished themselves by the boldness and success of their navigation or the gallantry and skill in naval combat." So I interpret that as President Adams knew that we were a young nation. We didn't have a history of being a maritime nation. We had inherited some of that from the British, but we didn't have our own history, and our officers didn't have all the necessary knowledge. And so he figured a library would be a way to help build and grow that knowledge among the officers and the sailors to catch us up to Europe, who had obviously centuries of experience, which is why, you know, he wasn't just limiting us to what the English had done. He was like, go borrow from the French, the Dutch, the Spanish, all the other great maritime powers of the time.
And all of those nations were already here in the U.S. at that time as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they really were trying to get anything that modeled these European navies.
Yes, absolutely. So we have in our collection a 1820 catalog of the library, and some of those titles are in foreign languages. And so they were really diligent about not just collecting stuff written in English, but French, Spanish, Dutch, and even some German titles to help the officers grow in their knowledge.
Now, someone once told me that the Navy's library is older than the Library of Congress. Is that true?
Yes, by the way we reckon it. So that letter that we referenced earlier was sent to the Secretary of the Navy on March 31st, 1800. Library of Congress's creation is in April of 1800. Now, they have a different view of when we officially came into being. They have the same view with a few of the other libraries who claim they're also older than the Library of Congress, such as the Army Library or the State Department's Library, which State Department, by the way, we reckon it, State Department is the oldest. It traces its roots back to 1789. So it's all about how Library of Congress sees it versus how we see it. So we see ourselves as older than the Library of Congress by about a month.
And our books, I guess, are more original because there was a certain thing that happened in August of 1814.
Yes, the British stopped by for a friendly visit and burned the Capitol to the ground. So unfortunately, the Library of Congress was lost in that blaze. The great thing was, for us at least, the Navy's library was loaded onto barges and sent up river and evacuated from the city along with other important documents. So we were important enough back then that they didn't want to lose the collection they had, because it would have taken a lot of money and effort to rebuild, just as Library of Congress had the same problem until Jefferson came in and donated them his entire library, basically. To have done that for us, it would have taken a lot more effort to replace that collection. I will say it was easier for us to get out of DC because our collection was much smaller. We have a 1820 catalog of what was in our library at the time, and it's a smallish book. It's not a lot of material. It was probably a couple hundred books, which is a lot easier to get out than a few thousand, which I'm sure is what the Library of Congress was operating with at that time.
Well, I guess it was a good decision of the base commanding officer at that time, Captain Tenji, to move the collection out of the area.
Yeah.
We mentioned earlier that the Navy Library was established in 1800. However, it wasn't until Public Act 21 in August of 1882 that it was officially established as a department library. What was unique about that change?
Yeah, so this is when I believe the Library of Congress would say we were probably created. There wasn't a real difference except for we became a reportable action along with several other federal libraries like state and army. The big change is we became something that Congress wanted to know about. So the Secretary of the Navy had to provide a report on what was going on in the library, how it was being funded, what it was procuring. I've actually gone, we have the SECNAV reports to Congress in our library. And so I've gone and read some of these reports post 1882, where the Secretary of the Navy is explaining, like, this is how much money they've had, this is what they're working on, what they're growing and developing. So it made us a requirement, basically, to be part of the Navy. While previous to this, we were kind of, you know, this add-on that if they had wanted, they could have gotten rid of us. But 1882, the Public Act makes it so we are a part of the Navy, that we need funding and personnel to help the Navy with its history.
So there is a realization that Navy history is important.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So how has the mission of the library evolved over 225 years?
So early history, while we don't have a lot, it was mostly focused on officers / you know, the executive and legislative branches providing information to them. 1870s, we start to have some records in our holdings of questions we answer to the public and of, you know, professional researchers coming to visit the library to look at our holdings. Because at this time there was, you know, sometimes there was a Navy archive, sometimes there was a Navy library, and sometimes those collections intermingled and sometimes they were separate. So we had all sorts of, not just books, but other ephemera and papers associated with the United States Navy. But our main primary goal is to serve the Navy, Congress, and the public by providing information on our history, on other navies around the world. We're most used by the public, I would say. So that mission of providing information to everyone free of charge, it remains the same and has never really wavered. There's been times where we've been more involved with Navy's warfighting efforts. For example, during World War II, the Navy Library was part of the Office of Naval Intelligence, ONI. And so we were a resource for them to get background information on things that they were trying to better understand about, you know, troop movements or the capabilities of other enemy navies.
Which is definitely important to do.
Yeah.
So you were mentioning that the Navy Library has been a part of the Office of Naval Intelligence and intermingled with the archives for several years. I'm sure it's also been other places in around the DC area, but what monumental move just recently happened? Do you mind elaborating about that?
So right now we're located on the Washington Navy Yard. In the past, we were in the Eisenhower Building or the Executive Office Building next to the White House in the late 1800s and early 1900s. We were then moved to the main Navy Building, which was on the Mall, but that got demolished during the Nixon administration. And that's when we moved to the Navy Yard in 1970. We were in a building 108 for a really long time, but recently Navy made the investment to kind of validate how they view us and the importance that both we bring and that the archives brings and underwater archaeology and art. They built a building within a building on the Navy Yard. A lot of these buildings are really old and they're also historic, so you can't really change the exterior, but we had a building whose interior was empty basically. And so they built a building within that. In fact, we have a 1887 map of the Navy Yard in one of our map drawers. It shows that the building we're currently in used to be a copper rolling mill. So they would roll out copper for ships that, you know, to put on the hulls in 1887. But Navy funded us. We went in, we built a building within a building, and now the collection is in a stable, sunless, correct humidity, correct temperature, especially even more environmental controls in our rare book room, and this will prolong the life of the material we have. So about every 40 to 50 years, we tend to make big moves, so we're hoping that's not the case from this building, because we have realistically everything we need to stay there for a long time with these better environmental controls.
Now, how do these environmental controls help preserve the library content?
One of the biggest is no more sunlight. Our previous building had lots of beautiful windows so the public could see the books, no problem. But sunlight destroys paper, destroys ink over time, bleaches them out so they're illegible. We also now have the same environmental controls we had for just our rare book room, we have throughout the whole library now for both our general books, our periodicals, our microfilm, and our rare, more valuable collection. So constant temperature, constant humidity means that the chance of mold growth or spread is almost zero. And so we can now make sure that these books will be preserved for a much longer time for future historians and researchers to use.
So we really want to keep the books around for at least another 225 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, with the Navy Library being around for the 225 years, I'm sure that the collection is really vast. What all types of materials are held in the collection?
So our collection covers a variety of topics. So we use the Library of Congress classification system. So most of us growing up know the Dewey Decimal because that's what we use in public libraries and school libraries for our nonfiction material. When we get to college, all of a sudden everything switches from numbers to letters. And so our library is broken up into a few main collections. So we have our reference area, our general stacks, our periodicals collection, and then our rare book room. Our general stacks and reference books are mostly ordinary books, especially material that we're acquiring now. And then our rare book room has our very old books, and included in those are some of the old naval registries and directories. We have our Z collection, which is kind of a catch-all. So we have ZB, ZC, ZE, and a few others. So ZB is biographies, and so that means if it appears on a piece of naval paper that we have, we put it in the ZB. And so for a lot of that, that meant when our predecessors of the history branch were answering questions in like the 50s and the 60s, and they were getting questions about, you know, Civil War or World War II, about people asking about their ancestor who fought in those wars, like, can you tell me about them? Or can you tell me about this ship? They would write it down, send a letter in response, and we kept a lot of those answers. And so that's where a lot of the ZB collection comes from. ZC is ships. And so for both old and modern, we collect articles written about ships, or especially for modern vessels, we collect commissioning books, decommissioning, change of command ceremonies. We have, for our most recent display in the library for Christmas, we had a variety of Christmas dinner menus from various ships from 1940 to now. ZE is our locations, and so we have information about various naval bases. It is very haphazard. We don't have everything. A lot of this paper, one could say, should be in an archival setting or even with NARA, but we've collected it because some of it is unofficial, and it helps answer questions. So we also have just odds and ends of items that get donated to us. And our biggest donations that we typically get are cruise books.
Do you mind telling us a little bit more about the cruise books?
Yeah, so cruise books are kind of like yearbooks for when you're out to sea. So you got to sea for 6-9 months a year, you come back, and someone, typically I feel like the public affairs officers, end up making a cruise book. And so ideally it has a picture of everyone, and then it provides a snapshot of what that ship did while it was at sea. So if you had a crossing the line ceremony, there'll be pictures of that. If you visited, you know, a island in the Pacific to help with relief aid from a natural disaster that happened there, there'll be pictures of that. So those are probably, for the public, our most used items to try to help people answer the question about their, like, can you tell me or find help me find a picture of my uncle, my aunt, my dad, my grandpa.
Now, what happens if someone were to, say, lose their cruise book in a move or it gets damaged somehow? Is there anything the library can do for this person?
If we have that cruise book, we could at least scan a portion of it. Unfortunately, especially for cruise books from the Vietnam era, which is where we tend to get a lot of our questions right now, those cruise books all have copyright issues because the copyright is not held by the Navy. It's held by the company who produced the cruise book. So we are happy to scan. I mean, just this morning, one of the other reference staff members scanned something from the 2008 Lexington book. Someone was looking for a picture of their dad, I believe. And so she found the dad, she found him in another place, scanned that, and then sent those to his daughter, who was asking about her father.
That is really neat. So with the uniqueness of the library's age, are there any notable or rare items that come to your mind?
Absolutely. So a couple of my favorites that we have in the rare book room, which is where our older / more fragile items tend to end up because it has even better environmental controls. A couple of my favorites, the Truxton Signal book. So Captain Truxton was one of the early naval officers post-American, like, successful independence. And he wrote one of our first signal books. So obviously we couldn't keep using British signals to communicate between ships because the British would understand what we were saying. And so he helped write and color one of the, well, I think it's the first one. And because of its provenance, because we can tell it's from him because he signed the inside of it and he left a note. Another favorite of mine is another signal book, this one being from the Civil War. And it has a unusual attachment on it where a piece of metal has been attached to the cover. And it's not to stop bullets. It's to sink the book to the bottom of whatever body of water you were in the quickest possible.
Right. You don't want the secrets of what you're saying to get out and fall into the wrong hands.
Exactly. So books can float. They're made mostly from paper, which, you know, paper comes from trees and trees float in the water for a time. So the idea was this piece of metal will drag this to the bottom as quick as we can so we don't lose our codes and signals.
Yeah, one of the things I thought was very interesting to see in the rare book room was the signed photo of Admiral Nimitz.
Yes. So Admiral Nimitz was a big fan of the library, of the archives. So he has his own museum and library in Fredericksburg, Texas. And between them, us in the library and upstairs in the Navy archives, we have a good chunk of his papers and memorabilia. So for us, that took mostly the form of certificates, whether that was crossing the line certificates, honorary degrees, as well as his commissioning to be a fleet admiral signed by both FDR and Truman.
Some pretty interesting documents.
Yes, yeah. A lot of the material in our rare book room is one of a kind or the last of a few copies.
Earlier you mentioned environmental controls used to be a problem for the librarian and staff. But what are some of the other challenges of preserving these historical documents for future generations?
Use is one of the biggest challenges. And so especially for items in the rare book room, the more an item gets used, the more chance it has to tear, to degrade. You know, that's why we limit exposure. And so this is part of our effort in the future for the library is digitization of these items to make them, A, more available for the public. While we are the holder of the item is more freely available for anyone to look at and use and research. But we have folded maps, and it's like every time you fold it, unfold it, there is a chance of a tear. There's just damage that comes about from handling. And so by reducing the amount of handling on some of these items, we hope to preserve their length. Because some of these items are mid to late 1700s or early 1800s. And so they've survived, you know, 200 years, but it's our job and duty to keep them for that next 200. And one of the best ways to do that is by not using them. So by digitizing them, we make it so you only need a computer to use them instead of the actual item.
And I was just getting ready to ask you, how does the library support the research and needs of Navy personnel and the broader public? With this massive digitization project that you're doing, can you give us some information about that?
So, for example, we just got back from a contractor that we sent a collection of ours we call Modern Bios. So these are biographies that were written by the Navy about various naval officers and enlisted, mostly from in the 60s to the 80s. It covered people who served before, but mostly was World War II Korean personnel and early Vietnam. So these are also some of our most used items because one of the unofficial jobs of our director is he kind of writes obituaries for various admirals. And so he uses the Naval Academy lucky bags, which are their yearbooks. But if we have a modern bio on someone as well, that fills in the gaps. And so he doesn't have to go get other official paperwork because this is official paperwork by the Navy about its officers. And so these are some of our most used things. And so we sent them out and they got scanned. We have about 4,000 or 5,000 of these. And so it will be a long process to get them all on the website, but it will help protect these items and then make them more available. So now in the future, it will be like someone might come to us and be like, hey, do you have something on this person? And we can redirect them to the website and be like, yeah, their modern bio is right here. I hope that helps instead of us having to get it out, scan it, and then send it to the person.
So not only can the public come in and access the items here on the Navy Yard or online, but does the Navy Library loan out to other libraries?
Absolutely. For material in our general collection or in our periodicals, there is a process called Interlibrary Loan, ILL. You go to your local library, and you will have to see if they have an ILL program. Depending on size of the library, distance of the material and such, sometimes it costs a few dollars. But what you can do is you can put in a request. And so if we have a book from 1985 on a unique subject that only five other libraries have, you can go to your local library, say, hey, I need this book. Can you help me get it? They will put an ILL request in. And once we receive it, if it's an item from our general collection or our periodicals, we're happy to loan it out. Material from our rare book room does not leave the room, let alone the building. If you have a smaller request, say, for example, the cruise book or an article, or it's a unique document we might have in the rare book room, we also scan stuff for free. Depending on the size of the object. It might take a little while to get it to you, but we offer scanning services here to help people get at least an electronic copy of the item potentially. And so if it's material such as that, you will need to like call us and say, hey, can I get a scan of a part of it, depending on the copyright.
Pretty easy then for people to access the Navy's history from here on the yard, their local library, or even at home then.
Yeah. So we have a catalog. So just check the catalog if you think there might be something we have, as well as I said, you know, modern bios are on our website. A lot of those other items I've mentioned from like Truxton or Nimitz, the Civil War signal book, we've also created pages for those on our website. For the Civil War signal book and code book, it doesn't have every page in it. It's just a picture of it along with some text description. But like I said, that digitization effort is putting more of those items on the website for people across the world to look at.
One question that I'm curious to learn about is, how does the Navy Library support the education and professional development of today's Navy warfighter?
One of our recent initiatives, along with digitization, is we're creating web pages for current hot topics. So South China Sea or Russian Navy or advances in naval technology. We'll have our books listed on there, like these books might help you understand these situations, conflicts better. Also, the intent is to put other material on there. So material from government sources, material from well-respected podcasts that offer in-depth analysis on the subject is a goal. This is a goal we have to make ourselves a little more nimble and to extend our reach. So like we've been talking about, we're here in Washington, D.C., limited ability for people to come visit us. So we want to provide material, even if it's not our own, that can help sailors and officers know this is the reason we're here and what the history or the current need to know of the matter is.
Historically looking back, besides the role or two mentioned earlier of the library being used by the Office of Naval Intelligence, can you provide any other examples of how the libraries directly supported past or current operations?
None directly come to mind because we tend to deal with the public more. The historians are the people who tend to get those questions come in by more official channels. And they go to the historians directly, and they're the ones who are answering the questions. So we obviously, you know, they'll come to us and then they're like, hey, what are all the books we have on operations in the South China Sea or things about mine warfare from Vietnam War to now? And so we help them find that material, but we don't always know if this is a pamphlet, a book, or a paper they're writing that's going to go over to the Pentagon and out to the fleet.
So Dylan, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners about the Navy Library and its 225 years of service to the Navy and nation?
Just like I said, this digitization effort, we're really hoping to get more on our website in the near future to let the public have more access to the unique items we have. Not all of them will be informational. Some of them will just be cool. We have cool things in the library, as every library does. And so the Navy Library has been able to exist for 225 years to serve the Navy, serve the public, to help grow that heritage and make sure that it's not forgotten. Those who do not study history are doomed to repeat it and such. And so that is partly how we view our task. But we also view our task as connecting people with their ancestors, you know, connecting a daughter with her grandfather who served in the Navy and providing that link to make sure people remember the Navy. I remember a study done a few years ago that Navy was the branch that nobody knew. Like, they knew we were on ships, but they didn't know what we really did, especially during non-wartime efforts. And so we want to make sure people recognize our importance and that we have a rich history that informs the officers and sailors today of what they did in the past and how they can continue to guide the future of the country.
Well, Dylan, I want to thank you again for your time today and wish you the best of luck in supporting the Navy Library toward its next 225 years. I'm sure you'll see me over there sometime soon doing more research for a future podcast.
Always happy to have more researchers come and visit.
To quickly recap, more information about the Navy Library, its catalog holdings, links to cruise books, exhibits, research guides, and other really interesting Navy history items can be found at history.navy.mil/research/library.html and also here in the podcast show references. Thanks for joining us today on this episode of Navy Library 225 Years Strong on Anchored in History, Stories of America's Navy.